Aren't you glad you're a Christian? Woo! Better turn that down a little, brother. Thank you. Okay, last week's memory verse here from 1 Timothy 6:10. Let's say it together. The love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. All right, some of you have heard this story before. When I was a little kid, back in the 80s, there were a bunch of Heinz ketchup commercials with the tagline, "The best things come to those who wait." Now, that was back in the days before squeeze bottles. Now, they had this one with this guy who was spinning around in his restaurant chair with the open bottle facing down while his food was being prepared. And his food came just in time as a little bit of ketchup, as the ketchup fell from the bottle, really cool. On top of that, it made the pretty young waitress laugh. So, one time when my family was at the restaurant, I decided to try it. I took the Heinz ketchup bottle at our table, took off the lid, turned it upside down, and proceeded to spin around in my chair. You know where this is going. In the short time it took me to get around, almost the entire contents of the bottle had spilled out. Now, either the restaurant had watered down their ketchup to make it last longer, or Heinz sure has some explaining to do with their false advertising. But going back to their commercials, which you can actually find on YouTube, the point is that the best things in life are worth waiting for. Our text for today is James chapter 5, verses 7 through 12. Be patient. You may want to be turning over there. Well, last week in the beginning of chapter 5, we looked at James's chastisement of the rich who were treating the poor unjustly. And with this section, the subject matter changed from those who were afflicting to those afflicted, his poor Christian brethren. And he showed that their response to the mistreatment that they had received should be patience and endurance. Christians will always face trouble while living in this realm. And so these qualities are necessary in order to remain faithful to the Lord. And I'm convinced the principles we find in this section, if they are just as applicable today when we are being oppressed, when we are going through other difficulties. Now, some people today teach the gospel of health and wealth, sometimes called prosperity theology. And it promises that living for Christ, and especially giving money to certain Christian ministries, it's going to turn this world into a bed of roses. It's the idea that if you are a faithful Christian, God will bless you with health, security, and prosperity. But the scriptures, they certainly don't teach that. Jesus flat out said, in this world you will have tribulation. And if they persecuted me, they will persecute you. I could actually do a whole sermon series on all the different passages that talk about that. At times, it is going to get pretty rough. And the question is, how are we going to respond during those times? Well, James said to be patient. And the first thing us impatient people say is, for how long? Until the coming of the Lord. Ooh, that could be a long time. Well, you notice that there are at least three references to the end of time in this short passage, verse 7, verse 8, and verse 9, and then a reference to the judgment in verse 12. Now, the reason is because circumstances are going to change for the righteous in that event. And so every Christian needs to live in the hope of Christ's return. If we are convinced that life is short and that God, you know, our Lord is going to set things right concerning those who mistreat us, well, then we have, you might say, a stimulus to hold out and to not react by losing hope or retaliating or something like that. See, as you know, not everything gets worked out on this side of heaven. Well, there are plenty of people who are underhanded and dishonest, and they are treacherous and unfaithful. There's lots of injustice and unfair treatment going around. I mean, some people get away with murder, literally. But in the end, God is going to set everything straight. He is going to balance the books, if you will. And so the coming of the Lord is motivation for Christians to endure whatever comes their way by being patient until the day of his return. Now that is something that is definitely more worth waiting for than ketchup. So first, strengthen your hearts, verses 7 and 8. Let's read. Be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. Behold, the farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too, be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Now, the expression, strengthen your hearts, it's not talking about doing more cardio at the gym, although I think more Americans probably ought to be doing that as well, but it simply means to stand firm in the faith. This word for strengthen that James used here, from sterizo, it means to set up something so that it remains unmovable. It's to fix it in place. It's often translated as establish. Now you think of mounting an expensive TV up on the wall. Now, as you know, the Bible talks a lot about the heart, the inner person. A simple concordance search, and you will find the word heart and its derivatives between 800 and 900 times in our English Bibles. So why is the heart such a big deal? Well, it's because you can't always control what's happening around you, but you can control what's happening inside of you. As one of my old teachers liked to say, it's not what happens to you in life that matters, it's what happens in you. Because if what happens in you is right, then what happens to you doesn't matter. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to ask everyone who struggles with patience to raise their hand, because I don't want to have to raise mine. You see, we are obviously at different levels in this, but I suspect if you are alive, then you still struggle with patience, at least in some way. And there's at least some growth. And one problem, I think, one problem for us specifically, is that we live in a very impatient society. We don't walk, we drive. And we honk on our horns and we tailgate when the other cars are going too slow. And we go through the fast food line and we throw our food in the microwave and we get upset because it's taking too long. And see, right now, some of you are thinking, how long is this sermon going to take? Probably longer than you're hoping. Well, the word for patient here, it's a term usually applied to patience with people. And the word literally means long temper. Sometimes you find it translated as long suffering. You see, you suffer long before you react. And simply put, it's having tolerance and putting up with people. It's having a long fuse. Well, R.C. Trench, in his Synonyms of the New Testament, he said, a man is macrothumia, that's the word here, if he has to relate to injurious persons and does not allow himself to be provoked by them or burst out into anger. Christians are not to give way to wrath or revenge, the normal knee-jerk reactions. So James offered the example of the dryland farmer who's got to wait for his harvest. Now, he obviously doesn't expect a harvest on the day that he plants. He's got to labor for a few months if he's going to receive the fruit of his labor. And it may be difficult. You know, he may suffer several disappointments before the harvest comes in, fighting with the weather and the weeds and the birds and the bugs. But the thing is, he doesn't plow up his field in anger, and he doesn't fire all the help or just give up simply because things do not go exactly the way he may want. If the farmer is to reap the fruit of his labor, he must exercise patience. So, what does he do? Well, he waits for both the early and the late rains to provide what is needed for his crop. Without the early rains, the seed wouldn't germinate, and without the late rains, well, the crop wouldn't mature. But the point is, he patiently waits for the proper time. And what about us? Any mistreatment that we might receive, it should not take us off track. We can't allow suffering to provoke us to wrath toward others or to give up on God. And so we need to strengthen our hearts. We need to toughen our minds so that we can endure whatever comes our way. We need to have a fixed purpose, and we need to hold on to that no matter what, you know, like the farmer. Christians are to be stout-hearted, not faint-hearted. Now, again, James believed that we could have that kind of strength of heart if we realize that the coming of the Lord is at hand or near. Now, because of the time frame, some people, they wonder if this is speaking of the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, when he came in physical judgment on the Jewish nation. But that's not necessarily the case. To be at hand or to be near, it could suggest that the Lord might come at any time. You know, when Jesus spoke of his return in Matthew 24, I believe that he taught that it could come at any time after the fall of Jerusalem. And so every generation of Christian needs to be on the alert, needs to be watchful for his return. See, his coming is always at hand. Now, on top of that, we never know when our personal lives will be over. We're not promised tomorrow. And so the farmer needs patience to wait until God's creation does its work, and the Christian needs patience to wait until Christ comes. And then we will receive the fruit of our labor. Next, do not complain against one another. Verse 9, let's continue reading. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. All right, what happens when we have been treated badly? Okay, we often want to take it out on others and to vent our frustration, right? And so given the circumstances of this Christian community under pressure, James's recipients, I mean, it's not surprising that James found it necessary to warn them against disunity within the church, fighting and biting. See, sadly, the difficulties of this life, they have a way of drawing out impatience by complaining and arguing against those who are closest to us. I mean, be honest, have you ever had a really bad day of work and then you came home and you took it out on your family? They don't deserve that. Why do we do that to them? Or have you ever taken a long trip with your family in a small car? What happens? Well, the complaining and the fighting can easily result from the difficult circumstances of having to wait and this length of sitting. And yet, once you get there, the trip was often worth it, and the grumbling and the fighting, it just was completely unnecessary. It just made it harder than it needed to be. And so if we can see the goal, heaven, and keep that in mind, it can help to prevent griping and grumbling and to give us patience. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. That's a good verse to memorize and to tell yourself from time to time. Well, also, James, he said that we should realize that to complain against one another is to risk the Lord's condemnation when he comes. This judge, you see, he's standing right at the door. It paints the picture of his entrance into this realm. Now, keeping with the picture, what's he going to find when he opens the door? Is he going to find his children patiently waiting for his return with their eyes on the door? Or is he going to find them distracted and unconcerned about his coming and engaged in the pitiful mistreatment of each other? So we might think of a father returning home to find his children, well, not doing their chores as asked, but complaining and quarreling among themselves. It's as if they'd forgotten that they even had a father who was coming home. So complaining against one another, it is certainly an indication of a lack of patience and endurance. All right, well, he then told us to learn patience from past examples, verses 10 and 11. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we count those blessed or blessed who endured. You have heard of the endurance of Job, and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings The Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. See, it's always encouraging to know that there are others who have successfully gone through what we have to go through. All right, so the first example is the prophets. See, the prophets of God throughout the ages, they received all kinds of mistreatment, all kinds of injustice. I mean, they're suffering, and of course, it came as a result of their service to God as they spoke in the name of the Lord. And often people did not like what they were hearing. And so the prophets, they were those who should have been respected. They should have been honored because they were specially chosen by God for that task. People, you know, they should have longed for the prophets and their message, but instead they often persecuted them. As Stephen asked in Acts chapter 7, which one of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? You know, in the Old Testament, we see them being mocked, threatened, beaten, put in chains and imprisoned, kept in cisterns full of mud, and many times killed. Jewish tradition, it tells us that Jeremiah was stoned and Isaiah was sawn in two. But in spite of their hardships, those prophets, they never gave up. Now, Jeremiah, he certainly thought of quitting, but he couldn't do it. He knew that his work was too important. Now, not only did the prophets maintain their faithfulness to their mission, well, they never turned against their persecutors. How easy would it have been for Jeremiah to just rear back and deck someone? But he didn't do that. No, they endured it with patience. They never could have done their work if they didn't patiently endure it. And thus, we count them blessed. We consider them to be great people of God. In Luke chapter 6, Jesus said, "Blessed are you when men hate you and ostracize you and cast insults at you and spurn your name as evil for the sake of the Son of Man. Be glad in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way their fathers used to treat the prophets." All right, well, Job is the second example that James put forward for our encouragement, and this is the only reference to Job in the New Testament. And I'm sure you remember, Satan, see, he believed that that blameless and upright Job would curse God if he was put through this challenge, through the test of suffering. And so God stood back and allowed Satan to take away his property, his children, and his health. Well, in Job chapter 2, verse 9, his wife said, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." Now, I don't know if she meant curse God and commit suicide or try to cuss God out so bad that he kills you. But Job replied, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity?" Well, and then his friends came along and, well, they weren't much better. They just thought he must have done something to deserve it. And so they're like, "What'd you do, man? What'd you do?" You know, they weren't very helpful. Yes, Job was upset. He wanted to know why it was happening to him. But through it all, he never turned his back on God. And he never gave up. Now, the word endurance in verse 11, it's a different word from patience in verses 7, 8, and 10, even though it's sometimes translated as patience as well. So here, from hupomone, the word primarily has reference to patience with your circumstances and not with people, as in the previous word. It literally means to abide under. And you remember James used this word a few times in chapter 1. So it paints a picture of being under this great load, but you remain there and endure it. You're not crushed. And so it's the ability to go through the tough times of life without breaking under the strain. You continue on even when it's rough. You never let yourself be overcome, if you will. So the question is, will you and I stand strong in the face of suffering and in the face of trials, or will we tuck tail and run? Will we turn and bolt when the suffering becomes too uncomfortable? See, there are too many people with their hand always hovering around the, hovering over the cancel button or the eject button. That's it. I quit my job. We're getting a divorce. I'm never going back to church. And I threw my phone in the river. It's easy to give up. Are your difficulties going to cause you to throw in the towel? Or have you strengthened your heart so you're able to push through them and to keep on keeping on? Job passed the test. He continued in his faith in spite of his amazingly difficult circumstances, way more than any of us, I believe, have had to endure. And so the Lord blessed him greatly. Read the last chapter of Job sometime. The Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. And guess what? God would bring a good end out of the suffering that was going on in James's time and our present time for those who are suffering and yet remain faithful to him through it all. So whenever, you know, we might think that we got it pretty bad, all that junk going on in 2020, we just need to remember the prophets. We need to remember Job to know that what we are called upon to endure is really small potatoes in comparison. And then, do not swear, verse 12. So let's read our last verse. But above all, my brethren, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment. All right, this verse confuses some folks. And so I want to spend a little bit of time on it. I get a lot of questions about this verse. Now, the scholars are all over the place as to the purpose of the expression, but above all. Now, I tend to think that this is just something that they were really struggling with. All right, this is something his readers had a real problem with, and so it was preeminent for them to heed. Now, James is not suggesting that his readers were uttering profanities. I mean, this section is not talking about hitting your thumb with a hammer and saying a four-letter word, although that's certainly something we should avoid as well. No, this is confirming a statement or a promise or an undertaking by an oath. And he clearly seems to be repeating the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, 34 through 37 on keeping one's word. All right, so why put it here? No, maybe it's a general admonition and he's changing the subject. You know, maybe it doesn't have any connection to what he just talked about. But if you think about it, one manifestation of impatience in times of trial might be hasty, irreverent, or deceptive oaths to save your skin or to get you out of trouble or something like that. Now, I think the real issue here is honesty in telling the truth. Jesus condemned the dishonesty of the Jews who tended to swear oaths in deceptive ways. You know, in one of his denouncements of the scribes and Pharisees, he said, "Woe to you blind guides who say, whoever swears by the temple, that is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obligated." So they're saying that it's okay to go back on their word by the technicalities that they had developed concerning their vows. So apparently James faced the same problem that Jesus faced in his earthly ministry. And there seems to have been a whole lot of swearing and oath-taking going around. Some people are dishonest by claiming in a big way that they are going to do something when they have absolutely no intention of actually doing it and keeping their word. It's kind of like the fine print on contracts and advertisements that legally allows them to go back on what they said they would do. Now, I personally don't believe that this is forbidding any and every manner of taking oaths. You know, some would disagree. Oaths were actually required under the law of Moses in certain circumstances, like Exodus 22, verses 10 and 11, concerning your neighbor's animal. And, well, of course, we got a number of Old Testament examples of oath-taking, like Abraham and Abimelech in Genesis 21. In Matthew 26, verse 63, Caiaphas wanted Jesus to answer by oath if he was the Messiah, which he apparently did. And even God took an oath to substantiate his promises to us. Hebrews 6:17. In this country, there are these occasions where we are required to take oaths in official matters, like filling out our income tax or certain business forms where we sign our name to a document. You know, it acknowledges under penalty of law that we are telling the truth. It's an oath. I mean, even the wording on some credit card receipts where we sign our name could be considered an oath. In a court of law, when someone is called to be a witness, so they must swear to tell the truth, even if they don't use those words. All right, physicians, well, they take the Hippocratic Oath. Police officers take an oath to uphold the law. Those in the armed forces take an oath of enlistment. The president takes an oath of office and so forth. Now, all right, one thing is that none of those are swearing by God or any sacred thing. But I think you'd still have to say that each of them is an oath. Now, here's something interesting. In 1 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 10, it speaks of perjurers, but that's literally oath breakers in this list of sins, which if you think about it, would be unnecessarily specific if all oath taking of any sort is prohibited. Shouldn't he have said oath takers and not oath breakers? So again, I do not think do not swear is to be taken as this blanket prohibition against all possible oath taking. But look, don't do anything that's going to hurt your conscience. See, what I think that Jesus and James were condemning is the giving of our word without keeping it or intending to keep it. See, I think it's specifically a condemnation against taking hypocritical oaths for the purpose of deception. A Christian is not to say, I had my fingers crossed, or something like that, to try to get out of an obligation. Well, the expression, either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, so it refers to the means, these means that might be employed in taking these oaths. And Jesus, he gave four examples in Matthew chapter 5. Some Jews seem to claim that they could swear by these and then not have to keep their oath. Well, I didn't swear by God. Well, actually, you did. Apparently, the scribes and the Pharisees, they might swear by heaven, but then later they'd renege on their promise by saying that, well, they only swore by heaven and not by God or his throne. You see, in Matthew 23 and verse 22, Jesus pointed out in this case, and he who swears by heaven swears both by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it. I mean, you see how ridiculous that is. I only swore by heaven and not by God himself. Ha ha, doesn't count. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. Christians are to be known for their honesty and their integrity. And so in everyday circumstances, when we say yes, we need to mean yes. And when we say no, we need to mean no. We're not to give a big flowery oath whenever saying something. Oh, I swear on a stack of Bibles. Cross my heart and hope to die. And of course, we're certainly not to attempt to wiggle out of our obligations by redefining words and trying to find loopholes and technicalities. See, this country, it once held a man's word in high regard. A man's word is his bond. And often, just a simple handshake, that sealed the deal between people. That is no longer the case. No, we're at the point in this country where it's hard to find trustworthy people at all. And so we're suspicious of everyone. But Christians are not to act like the world. We're to rise above it. And so we should be known for our honesty and integrity. There should be no small print on the contracts given by Christians. And again, so that you may not fall under judgment. I mean, I would hope that that would help us to be motivated to live in accordance with God's standards, not the world's. Lying, that's attributed to the influence of Satan. As Jesus said of him, he was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. So are we going to align ourselves with the Lord or with the devil when it comes to our word and our oath-taking? As it's been said, the best guarantee of any statement is not an oath, but the good character of the one who makes it. I mean, maybe if we were just truthful in the beginning and we had a reputation for being truthful, we wouldn't need all that. You've heard the story of the boy who cried wolf. His word was no good anymore. As Christians, no one who knows us should ever think of demanding an oath, or something like that from us, because they would be certain that we always tell the truth. Our yes is yes, and our no is no. Enough of that. All right, in conclusion, looking back at our passage here, we can all handle reasonable situations pretty well, most of us at least. But how do we do in the unreasonable, the unfair situations? It's easy for us to lose patience in times of great difficulty and trial. For our patience to decrease as our burdens increase. But the coming of the Lord, that should be motivation for Christians to patiently endure whatever hardships, whatever heartaches come our way. And of course, you've got to actually believe it for it to do any good. So let's strengthen our hearts to endure. As the saying goes, we need to keep on keeping on. Or as Winston Churchill would say, never give in, never give in, never, 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 never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. A different context, of course, but really good advice. On top of that, let's not take out our frustrations on one another, and let's learn patience from the examples of the prophets and Job. And also, one manifestation of impatience in times of trial might be hasty, irreverent, or deceptive oaths. So let's make sure we don't fall into that as well. Vows, promising, swearing, oath-taking, just let your yes be yes and your no, no. So in times of mistreatment, as always, we need to follow the example of Jesus Christ. While being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And so our challenge for this week is for each of us to look at our lives to see if we're doing that, knowing the righteous God is on our side. It should be a lot easier to endure those who oppress us. And of course, the question is the righteous judge on your side? Or rather, are you on his side?